There are so many women out there that are taking a stand against gender inequality and are paving the way for the future generation. Ordinary women that are creating a more inclusive and powerful society, free from stereotypes, racism and sexism. And I'm here to share their stories with all of you. Stay tuned, because this is WEN Power, your source of inspiring, powerful and positive stories. And I'm here to discover how we can change the narrative, one story at a time. I am your host, Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of WEN Power. Hello and welcome to a new episode of WEN Power Podcast. We are here today at Leighton Orient Trust with Zara Pope-Williams. She is the founder of ZW Media Limited and she's a radio facilitator. Zara has worked several years as a senior PA and radio producer, and now she's using her experience and approach to music and radio to provide consulting service engaging with hard-to-reach communities. She is, all her services are backed by NHS, prisons and school. So thank you, Zara, for hosting us here today in your office where you run your radio channel. It's a pleasure to have you as a guest of WEN Power Podcast and for you to share your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to start with a little bit of a provocative question, if you let me. My question is, what are you fighting for today?
Well, I think we've decided I'm fighting for youth empowerment. I feel like it's something, I believe just simply that they are the future, but I think some young people at the moment, I think they need empowering to, I don't know, apply for jobs, empowering to sort of survive in a much sort of kinder and friendlier way to each other, and that I suppose that just comes from the young people that I meet in different establishments. I just think they need all-round empowering as well. So I think we've lost that sort of idea of a community raising young people, where there's a lot of young people raising themselves and stuff like that. So I think empowering young people is a big mission of mine.
And this is a right fight.
Yes.
To take. And drawing from your experience when you were younger, who was mentoring you, or who was empowering you?
I suppose if I look at it now, obviously I'm older now and know that what mentoring and empowering is. And I'd say my biggest mentor and empower was my grandmother. So in all of our lives, like me, my brothers and sisters, even my cousins, my grandmother and my grandfather were the pinnacle of everything. They taught us how to dress, where to go, how to act when you go out, who to speak to. Make sure you always have a handbag and shoes for church, like literally. And because I think all of our parents had the same idea, you know, it was really funny. So we was talking about it the other day, that every one of our friends were either going to Spain for summer holidays or France. We were going to my grandmother's house and we all turned up at the same time. And that's where you spent your 6 weeks holidays. That's where you spent your half term. But she raised us, you know, she taught us how to sew, how to wash, how to cook, how to clean, if you're going out, how to dress, like literally everything. So I think in her own way, she was kind of more empowering. She also taught, you know, the girls to be independent, the boys to be independent. She taught boys how to cook. She always said that the boys needed to be able to cook, not just the females being able to cook. And she was quite a thing. And my granddad was the other one that taught us discipline and how to act. And there was no reason to be bored. There was a lot of things that you can do, even if it's just playing outside. So I think they were my mentors when I was younger. And my mum as well. I think my mum showed me that you can have 5 kids, still work and not complain and do what you need to do. And as far as I was, my mum always worked and wasn't working too much, as in we always went away for the weekend. We went to Devon, Cornwall, Barcelona. We like literally went on holiday. She always had time, but she was always working. Plus there was us five as well. So I think my mum was also a good role model in terms of saying that you can work and do what you want to do and, you know, have the family life and stuff. So Yeah.
I think this is really important as well, yeah, to have these values and to understand that you can be a woman, you can be a mother, you can be a sister, a daughter, and still do everything else,
yeah,
that comes within, not just focusing on one thing, but being able to enjoy fully life and just be there for everything, yeah, you need for your family and everything. Let's talk about your career and how you discovered this passion for radio and for music. And can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Okay, so my passion for music was, it's going to sound really bad, but I was really interested in the business side. I wanted to make money and I couldn't sing. So I was always interested in radio. So radio sort of came when I did my first work experience, and I was meant to do it, you know, the local work experience you get from school. Mm-hmm. I was one of those tearaways. I made my mum write a cover letter and send them to Choice FM and BBC Radio 1. And BBC sent a package that was so long and I couldn't fill it in because I would have had to get my school to sign it. And Choice FM just sent me a letter saying that I could come for an interview. So I did a work experience at Choice FM when it was in Borough High Street. So I loved radio, I loved music, but I didn't know whether it was radio or music that I really enjoyed. So when I went to uni, I thought, well, I want to make money, but I want to do music. Both my parents thought it was like a dead end job. They were like, music doesn't make any money. And I was like, yes, it does. So I did music industry management degree, which on my first day, the teacher got us all into a room and said, 50% of you will not make it in the music industry. So then I wanted to cry. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? But I really enjoyed the music business. I really enjoyed finding out about it. I did economics of the music industry. Back then it was CD sales, and I was really fascinated and interested in that. I had a job in Woolworths where I used to change the charts, CD music charts and stuff. So I was always interested in music, and then that sort of carried on my music. And then my mum, so I used to also take all her hangers and try and set up a pirate radio station in her attic. And I pierced all these holes in the wall. And she wasn't very impressed, but she must have supported my passion, because one day she was working in East London, and my mum's an occupational therapist. She was working in East London. She was like, Zara, there's a radio station and you can volunteer for it. I've arranged for you to meet the guy that runs the radio station. So I met him, I volunteered for radio. And then I ended up taking over, but I still like had a passion for music and radio. But then radio became my thing. I got a qualification. The radio station paid for me to get a qualification, teaching qualification. I started teaching radio. I'm very good at talking, so I like doing a presenter. And it's easier for me to get everything out on the radio than it is face to face. So yeah, just the passion for radio built from there. And then when I started working in prisons, they said, look, we know you're teaching radio, but can you take over the music class? And I was like, I don't know anything about producing music. So I took over the class and I was like, right, guys, what we're going to do, this is a music class, but we're going to do radio in the music class. They were like, but Miss, I was like, well, it is music production, but we're going to do radio production. It's good for you to learn a new skill. So I taught radio. And then while I was teaching radio, I taught myself how to do music production. So I taught how to use Reason, Cubase, how to produce music. And then I was like, right, guys, we're going to go back to music production now, because you need to still learn the new skill, but you also need to go back to the old skills. So that was it. I took over the music class. So I was the music and radio teacher for a long time. And then when I started my business, I was like, oh, I can put this all together. I met the lady from the NHS in the prison, and then it kind of built from that. But I've always had some form of passion for music, and I've always loved radio. I always listened to radio stations, so I didn't think it was going to be my living, though, at all.
No.
I was a bit of a drifter. I just thought, yeah, I love radio. Yeah, this sounds good. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then
here we are.
It became my career.
Radio and music, it's also a very male-dominated field. How did you find any difficulty? Did you find any obstacles along your way? And if there was any, how did you manage to overcome?
When I was training in like the music, the record company, the only obstacles I had was that people just assumed I was an A&R. No one really knew I was either an A&R or a PA if I wasn't a musician. So no one ever, it was really hard, so no one would ever mistake. So I'd go there instead of my boss and I'd be like, okay, I'm taking the meeting today. But no one would really take me seriously. It was almost like, okay, you are taking the meeting until your boss comes. So that was thin. And then, but when I started running my own business, that's when I realised that it is a very male-dominated. And my boss did tell me that once. He did tell me that, you know, it's very male-dominated, especially when you're talking to, like, different record companies at the time. But what I find is, because it's so male-dominated, they almost don't expect a female to be doing it. And if it is, it's just like it's specialised. Like, oh, you know, everyone else says, oh, how did you get into music and radio? And people are always shocked when I get excited about different bits of equipment, and, like, you know, ask about wires and recorders and stuff like that. They just don't expect you to have it. And like I was saying, I had a few problems when it came to booking studios.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to use a female engineer, and she's a very good engineer. She's won like MOBO awards because she was a musician before she became a studio engineer, and I wanted to use her. And a lot of the studios, one in particular, wanted her to meet his engineer so his engineer could go through it with her to make sure, that's what he said to me, to make sure that she knows what she's doing. And also, he didn't know whether I would be able to book the studio, or he would have to get back to me. So obviously, because I know it's male-dominated, I actually had to ring a friend who actually suggested the studio and get him to ring and book it, and they booked it straight away without asking any questions, and he was allowed his own engineer. Because his engineer, he was allowed his own engineer, he didn't have to talk to the engineer or anything. So I get that quite a lot. I still get that now. Now I'm working within the football world as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's also
another male-dominated,
alpha male-dominated. But it is changing very slowly. That's what I will say. I'm seeing a bit more women that, not necessarily the musicians, that kind of do the meetings and do run their own businesses and are in charge. But it's very minimal, very minimal. There's a lot more work I think they need to do.
And how we can change this?
It's going to be hard, because you've still got a lot of things are still owned by older men, let's just say more mature men, who have no intentions of letting it go. So unless you can become a director or a CEO, but I think that they still have a responsibility to sort of make the policies known or trickle it down to say, okay, there is women now in the industry, and there is women running their own studios, there is women doing photography, there is women doing radio production and podcasts and stuff like that, and that actually they should cater for everybody to give, you know, women a chance to move up and do different things as well. So it's changing, but very slowly.
Do you think also the change might happen quicker from an educational point of view as well, from schools, from university?
Yeah.
Can this trigger somehow
I think I think this is where the youth empowerment comes in, because unfortunately there is a lot of young women that don't apply to certain jobs because they believe it is a male-orientated job. And don't get me wrong, there is some jobs that, you know, men can do because they're, you know, maybe physically stronger or something like that. But I just feel like there is a lot of jobs that are male-dominated because there is a lot of females that don't apply or haven't been taught that they are capable of applying for those kind of jobs as well. So I think if you can come from an educational point of view, if you can get them from when they're young, then you've got more of a chance of it changing.
Mm-hmm. How did ZW Media came to life? When did you launch
it? If I'm honest, ZW Media was made up.
Okay.
I have to be honest, I can't lie. So when I first got my NHS contract, I was in the prison, and they said, right, Zara, we want to hire you, but you need to sort of write us a plan. So they said, write us a proposal and we'll consider the proposal and let you know. So I left education, I wrote the proposal. I had no idea what a proposal was. So I sent a scheme of work and session plan, because I'm a teacher, and I just changed the words around. So they finally got back to me. It did take them a while, but got back to me, and they were like, yeah, no, that's fine. We want to hire you for like 10 weeks. And I originally was hired to teach the occupational therapists how to do music so they could do it with the young men. So I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So then they said, but then I got all these forms, suppliers' codes and name of business and company number and stuff. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't have it. So I went onto Word. I got Times New Roman name, put it in bold, in number 14, put it on top of a piece of paper, and just put, oh, well, what's my name? Zara Williams. Okay, ZW Media.
That's it.
That's it. That is how it came. I can't lie. I made it up on the spot, and my plan was to change it. After I'd got the contract, I was like, yeah, I was going to change my name and get the contract, and then I saw this paperwork with ZW Media on it. And I was like, oh, God, I can't change it. This is actually official documentation. And then, yeah, so it stuck. So it's my name.
You can't change it now.
So that's how it happened. But I think I panicked, and I'd never run my own business. So I was surprised that they even said yes, to be fair. Because, I sent a scheme of work and session plan.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, none of them are teachers. They're occupational therapists, so they didn't realise. That was 7 years ago, so.
So, still there.
Yeah, so then, yeah, ZW Media was formed. My logo was actually my nephew.
Okay.
My nephew chose my logo and made it. I cannot claim anything. And then he was one, he said, oh, well, if you do the W and M, it looks like a wave. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's good. And, yeah.
And that's it.
I made it up. That was it. I can't lie.
And how are you using music, like more like in a therapeutical way, to empower young people and adults in the environment you work in, like prison or NHS or in general with the young people you work?
So I kind of use it in two different ways. So some of it's a therapy and some of it's not a therapy. So I realise, even for me doing radio production, there's a lot of communication skills in it, a lot of transferable skills. Which is good for young people to learn anyway. So that's where the education route comes mm-hmm. in. So I actually teach it as a course. It can be a short non-accredited, or it can be a long accredited course. I actually write the course to accreditation, so I can write them to NCFE things. So that's what I do, and that's what I do for Leighton Orient at the moment. But I do a bit more. I'm working on getting this centre accredited to be able to deliver radio production okay. to young people. So that's how I do it for young people. On the therapeutic way is the connection I have with NHS. So I work with various prisoners, young males to adult, in conjunction with the NHS. And I'm part of a larger service. So I sort of work with the guys that are suffering from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the young guys. So it's their sort of embedded trauma that they wouldn't really class as trauma. They might just class it as their everyday life. So we go through it. I don't have them for very long, so I get them to give me a snapshot of their life. Sometimes they give me a piece of paper with three lines on it, and I say, is this your whole life? In three lines. Sometimes they give me a piece of paper with like a whole A4 page. But what we do is we go through those lines and then we put it to music. But the music can be in any way. So it could be poetry, poem writing, they can rap, they can sing, and they can do whatever, they can do it however they want to portray their feelings. So I let them swear, I let them do whatever. It's all very confidential, and that's how they portray it. At the end of the 8-week program that I do with them, then their sort of key worker or psychiatrist can come in and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's normally things that they didn't know about the young person that he was only able to put through music. And then the radio therapy comes with helping them with team building and working together, and learning to work with each other, which is sometimes, especially if you work with gangs, it's about them being able to settle their differences and work together. But at the same time, we work on them being able to communicate their problems together and, you know, it be relatable, and they do that through radio and stuff like that. So that's kind of, I use the radio production and music production as a therapy, but I also use it educational, mainly young people, but I sometimes do adults as well.
That's really interesting. I mean, something I never heard of, so it's really...
So I'll tell you an interesting fact, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
So I actually wrote it for the NHS and created... I wanted to... So because I taught music and I taught radio production, mm-hmm. I wanted to merge those two together, but add a sort of therapeutic element to it. There is music therapy, but music therapy is more like sit around in a circle and sing Kumbaya and... No. Have a guitar.
I think this is more. This is more powerful. It's also very intimate because you establish a connection with the people you're working, and they are free to express themselves how they want. There is no judgment. There is no.
No, and it's another way, because some young people don't like to talk. So that's what I say. So some of them will mention something in their music that they've never said in a session that they've had through talking. Or sometimes I'm just a motivational tool. So sometimes you'll get a new person involved in the service and they're a bit sceptical or not too sure. Or, you know, do people think I'm crazy because it's an NHS pathway? So sometimes the key workers will send me a young person just to motivate them, to show them that, you know, this service is actually okay. You get to do a bit of music, you do a bit of gardening, and yeah, that kind of thing. And then we'll do an assessment later on where they can get to do the 8-week program if they want to as well. Mm-hmm. It's all by choice.
Okay.
So I never force anyone to do it. They don't have to. All I say to them is that, is this something you can do for 8 weeks? And they say yes. And I say, well, remember, you've signed your life away to me for 8 weeks. So I don't want to hear that we are not doing this for 8 weeks. And then they're like, okay, fine, miss, it's okay, I'll do it.
Talking about spoken words, poetry.
Okay.
We get in there. I know you wrote a book, and it's Poetry Behind the Mask.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about this book.
Okay, so it's a bit of a long story, but I did a poetry challenge one time with one of the prisoners that I work with, and I asked him to write a poem, and he was struggling, and they like to challenge you occasionally. So he was like, well, I'll write one if you write one. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna write one, but you better write yours. So that's kind of how it was. Really silly. I shouldn't have challenged him, but I was so annoyed. I was like, okay, I'll do one and you do one. So he said okay, and we came up with a title and we did a thing. But then actually, when I was writing it, I know I meant to help him, but when I was writing it, I was like, actually, I've really forgot how much I enjoy writing poems. This is actually pretty good. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna write another one. And then I wrote another one. And then I read another one. And then I realised I'd be sitting in class teaching some of the boys, and I'd be like, okay. So, like, there's a poem in there called The Ops, which is, they're always talking about the ops.
Okay.
And the gangs and stuff. So I used to find that they used to give me sort of inspiration or ideas, or I'd say one of the poems to them. And then it was kind of a mismatch of that. And then it was, you know, some of them, you know, with their mental health, sort of like, I started to imagine how they would feel, or how it would come across to me, or how I would feel on their behalf. So I ended up writing about 25. So I was like, I read one to my mum. She was like, oh, these are really good, you should publish them. And I was like, no, I'm not going to publish them. So I wrote them, and then lockdown happened and I had nothing to do. So I was like, I'm going to actually publish them. So yeah, I decided to publish them. And then one of the ladies I work with, she's an art therapist, but she's actually an artist. So she got my concept and did the front cover for me.
Okay.
And then I found a publishing company, and I didn't have any images or anything. So I wasn't I've never published a book before. So that's why some of the pages are blank, because I didn't have enough imagery to go on some of the inside pages. But I thought, you know what, actually, I just want to publish it. And then I realized a lot of the guys that I work with like the poem, so eventually I want to do like maybe a prison tour and give out some of my poetry books and see how they feel about it, kind of thing. So that's the plan behind it.
Is there one that is your favorite one here?
So you know, I'm all about empowerment and stuff, so one of my favorite ones would be trying to think there. Well, I like them all. I really do like them all. But one of my favourites, my personal favourite, is The Confusion. And this was because there was a group of guys in my classroom talking about, you know, black skin and lighties and whiteies or whatever names that they give them. And there was a guy that said, oh, well, I never date black women at all. I only date white girls. And he was like, he feels that black women are ugly. So I said, okay. So I got involved in the conversation. I try and hold back, but I couldn't. I was like, but your mum and your sister are black. So are you saying, and he was like, no, you can't say that about my sister. So then one of the boys was like, well, then obviously he said, no, but he was like, no, but Mrs. Wright, you just said all black women and all black girls are ugly. And I know your sister, and I could never say that about your sister. And then it just, so I got them into a conversation about it. So rather it getting out of control, we had a conversation about it. But I was also under the impression that they thought that the ideas that they were coming up with were new.
Mm.
And I was like, well, this is not new. This is something that's been discussed throughout the ages. But that's another thing where they think that they're the first to come up with these things. So when we had the conversation, so that's my favourite.
You want to read it?
Okay, so this is called The Confusion. Light skin, chocolate, caramel, dark and white skin are the names that I give the tings in my life. But the light skin tings think they're too nice. The only darkies in my life are my mum and my wife. We think we are new in giving ratings, but fail to realise that it's no new thing. The colour caste system was breeding embedded slavery, which was a sin. Like names ebony and ivory, we still hear things like you don't want to catch too much sun, but our skin flourishes with heat and starts to breathe. We need to start to celebrate and elevate no matter our shadings. They already dilute our race, but know this, we stay in for four generations, we take up space. Let's not be confused, let's embed something a little different. The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. Let's not let them use words as an alternative noose. Like black spot, the blackened means black or dirty. Blacklisted, like the scars on our back. Black mark means to discredit. Let's not be confused, claim back our credit. And remember, not only Martin Luther said it. So yeah, that's my favorite. Very strong poem.
It's beautiful. Thank you for reading for us. We are moving towards the end of this interview.
Okay.
Let's go back to some more serious questions.
Mm-hmm.
How COVID impacted the job you're doing and also the way you interact with people.
COVID was really hard, actually. So I did actually lose contract. So I was working in Brixton with adults, and it was the first time. I had been there for 2 years, which was good in itself. I was only meant to be there 8 weeks, but I was there for 2 years. And I'd never done the therapeutic music with adults before, so this was my first time, and it was actually working. It was really good. And then when COVID hit, they had to allocate the money to something else. So I kind of lost the contract. So it impacted me in that way. Also, I was in prison, I was working in prisons like 4 to 5 days a week. So to go from that to working out my bedroom, I found it a bit weird at first. I found it quite hard to sort of put myself together or plan my day, because everything was based around prison. So but I must admit, sort of working with the NHS, they made it easier. Like, we had supervision, then they started coming up with Zoom meetings and stuff and still making us part of what was happening in the prison. But that was really hard. And in working with young people, so obviously young people couldn't attend to sessions. I couldn't do one-to-ones with them. Even in the prison, I could only work with them down the telephone. So no music, no nothing, just sort of had to keep giving them stuff to do. So it was really, really, really hard. Especially the first lockdown. The second lockdown, they kind of made it easier and found a way for us to kind of get through. But yeah, first lockdown was really hard.
And what are the projects that are coming up now for you? Let's say, what is on the pipeline?
The pipeline, I'm hoping to... So I have a contract with the NHS, but I'd really like a contract with the prison, because I think the things that I do for the NHS, I'd like to make available to the whole prison. I might be being very ambitious there, but I want the whole prison to be able to have access to it. Mm-hmm. And I know it works with the young people, and I get young people that want to do it that can't because they're not part of the service. So I think that would be my larger goal, to have a prison that I work in that I can do it with, it be open to everybody's choice to be able to do that, and have radio production as an activity in prison is what I'm working on at the moment.
That would be super.
So it'd be like a job that they get paid for, like all the other jobs they get in prison, but do radio.
Amazing.
That's my goal.
That sounds super cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear.
Yeah.
If you... For sure.
Well, I've sent a proposal, so...
So, finger crossed for that. If there was an advice you would like to share with all the women and girls that, and even men that they are listening to our podcast today, to empower them or just to motivate them?
I just say, if you like it and you want to do it, just go for it. As again, my grandmother always said, the worst thing someone can say to you is no. That's just the worst thing they do. It doesn't mean that you can't do it. So if you see something that you like and you want to do it, study for it, work hard for it, and do it. And if you can't do it and don't get hired, run your own business. There you go.
Last question.
Yeah.
I asked you at the beginning what you're fighting for.
Yeah.
And now I would like to know, what would you like to stop fighting for?
Like I said, I would like to stop fighting for equality. I feel like it shouldn't be something that you have to fight for. I think if you're female, young or old, and you are, you know, qualified for that job just as much as a man is qualified for that job, if you happen to be have a certain ethnicity and qualified for that job, it shouldn't be a factor. The factor should be, are you qualified for the job, and can you do the job that they're asking for, and you should get hired. Simple as. I don't think where your address or where you live or what your name looks like or your ethnicity should ever be a factor on someone hiring you. And unfortunately, it still happens today where people don't hire you based on your ethnicity, based on your name, based on the area that you live, based on your background. But if you are qualified and you come with the qualifications and you do a good job, you should get hired. And I think it should just be that simple. And I would love to stop fighting for that. And maybe it will happen in the next sort of 5 to 10 years, hopefully.
Well, I'm going to fight together with you for this.
Yes.
And with Wempower and all the stories that we're sharing.
And always make sure you do your little bit to help. Definitely. As long as there's someone out there doing a little bit to help, that's all you can do.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today. Mm-hmm. I need to say a big thank you as well to Brian Channer. Is the ally, the man behind this meeting, yes, and the Black Policy Institute. It was a pleasure to listen to your story, to your experience, to the poems, and I hope that everyone that listened to this interview today is going to feel empowered the way I feel right now. So thank you.
I hope so too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
If this was your first time listening to Wempower Podcast, thank you for taking the time. You can find us on Podbean and Spotify. Subscribe to our newsletter on wempower.co and keep up to date with all the future projects on all our social media at WempowerUK. Thank you to all the women out there that are following and supporting Wempower. I will continue to bring to you powerful, inspiring and positive stories from all over the world. Don't forget, together we empower women. This is Ilaria for Wempower Podcast. Until next time.